The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It is Friday, January 30th. Only one day left of January, but it is a cold one out there. It might be one of the coldest days that we're going to have this year. I don't know if it's going to get any colder than this, but it's showing -5 right now on my thermometer here at the studio. I don't know what it is at your house, but that's cold no matter what. And the wind's blowing out there, so it is certainly a cold morning. We got a great show for you coming up this morning. We have folks from the Curling Club of the Berkshires. What is that, you say? Well, you should definitely stay tuned and find out. It's fascinating. It's a local club that does a lot with the sport of curling. You may not be familiar with it, and you'll be more familiar with it today after the show. So stick around for that. It's going to be a great show. We're going to talk all about the sport and the club and how you can get involved and have a little fun. And, you know, it's kind of appropriate. The coldest day of the year, we're talking about a cold weather sport, or at least a sport on ice, if you will. So that'll be great. We'll be right back to that conversation in just a minute. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Extreme cold warning in effect until 11 a.m. EST this morning. Today, sunny, cold with highs around 7 above. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 28 below. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing. Cold with lows around 6 below. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 19 below. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, when you hear wind chill values that low during the day, you know you got to pay attention. So it will be cold today. We will have some wind today, and bundle up there. Maybe warm up your car before you get into it. And, you know, if you're walking, make sure you're bundling up really, really lots of layers and keep all that exposed skin covered. You definitely want to take precautions today. It's just going to be one of those days and nights, and then we'll get through it. And, you know, how it's only what, how many days now until we turn the clocks forward? Not too many, I think, like 30 something days. So we'll keep that in mind. All right. Welcome back to Morning Drive. Now we'll start to introduce the folks from the Curling Club of the Berkshires, and I will get a shot of all those folks for you on our TV channel. Of course, you're listening to us on 89.7 WTBR-FM, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge, also on the PCTV Select app and on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301. We have here in the studio, we have Peter O'Neill, we have Rick Nasman, I have Mark Fischetti, and Cindy Nasman. And I didn't get that in order from what you're seeing there, but good morning and welcome. Thanks for coming today.
Thanks for having us, Sean.
Yeah. And so we had the idea to bring you on the show a few months ago when I stumbled across your booth at the Lennox Apple Squeeze back in September or October. And I thought it was just fascinating that I didn't know that we had a curling club here in the Berkshires. I don't know really a lot about the sport, so I was kind of interested in knowing more about it. And then I thought about it and I said, well, if I don't know much about it, I'm sure a lot of people listening and watching would love to know more about it. So I'm kind of curious, and anybody can jump in this first question. How did you folks first hear about curling and be interested to the point where, A, you wanted to play it, and B, you wanted to sort of get a club together here in the Berkshires so other people could play?
Should I tell that story, Rick?
You gotta tell the story.
Rick was having a special birthday, and he wanted to go curling. So a few of his friends and I decided, all right, let's take Rick curling. Where can we do that? But there's a curling club in Norfolk, Connecticut. And so we called up, and they said, come on down. So six of us went down, and we got introduced to curling. We had a great time. We came back, told everybody else we had a great time. And it's kind of snowballed from there, slowly but surely. We went, traveled around, and then we decided to start our own club.
So it was just that. And how far away was that club that you had to go? Over an hour away?
Norfolk's about 50 minutes from Lenox.
5-0.
Yeah, 15. It's a two-sheet facility, and as Mark said, it was a great time. Six of us went down. First time, it was kind of on my bucket list to do, and we went down, and we had several instructors down there, and just had an absolute ball. And then we said, this is something we got to do again. We came home, we told our wives and other friends, and we just said, we got to find a place where we can go to try this again, to expose you to the game. And somehow we ended up in Falmouth, Mass. There's the Cape Cod Curling Club, and we had a group of us that went down there for our second adventure with a number of folks being newbies, and they had a blast as well. And that was in 2011 that we did our initial curl. And then in 2016, we'd kind of, I'll say, recreational curled occasionally each year after 2011. And then in 2016, we developed and formed our own club. So we've been around since 2016 as a formal club.
So it took a little while. And what was that first experience like when you got there? Did you immediately sort of get your hands on the equipment? And did someone sort of mentor you along to try, you know, how do you actually do this? And what are the, because every sport has its norms, right? It's, you know, you get up to the line and you do certain things. And, you know, so what was that like?
We actually had a funny experience. And we do this now ourselves, you know, we bring new people in. There was a stone that was on the floor, and we're all standing around looking at the stone like, okay. There's a warm room in most clubs where it's warm, and you can, there's comfortable chairs, and you can watch the curling going on. And they showed us slowly on the carpet what to do, and then they brought us out onto the ice, and we all were hesitant, and we stepped on the ice, and there's stones on the ice. And it didn't take only a few minutes where we felt comfortable. And, yeah, because they had shown us everything on the carpet inside first. So that's what we do, too. We do at the Boys and Girls Club in Pittsfield, and we take people through the steps, and then we bring them out onto the ice, and everything gets going.
And that first time that you did it, what kind of equipment was needed for you at that time? Were there things that you could use? I assume you didn't have stones of your own, for example, or I think there's other things, like I think sweeper is something we're going to talk about, right?
Right.
And even the shoes and things like that. What was required of you that first time you went?
They had all the equipment there, just like we do at Boys and Girls Club, too. So if you want to come on and try it, just show up.
Yeah, that's how I learned. I came in 2018 to a Learn to Curl that I saw. The club had advertised in the Berkshire Eagle, and I thought, oh, hey, let's try this Learn to Curl thing out. And yeah, when I went there, they did a 15-minute instructional thing in the warm room, talked about safety as well. Then we got out to the ice and did a little practicing, a little learning. And then after that, we played a little bit of a game. And that's what we do when we have our Learn to Curls. And we have all the equipment for people to come in. You don't have to bring anything. We have all the equipment. You just come in with a pair of clean shoes, and you're off and running.
Wow. Cindy, you have slider you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I figured as long as you were talking about what they have, it's the slider is anyone can come and you put it at the bottom of your shoe so that you can slide out. We have shoes that already have these built in, but when you're learning, this is what you use on the
bottom. So basically you can use any shoe that you walk in with and you can attach that to it.
No, can't do that.
Okay, well, there you go. That's why I'm at it.
You're supposed to bring in some nice clean shoes because we want clean ice and not a lot of pebbles and anything that would get stuck on the bottom of a stone.
Sure.
It makes your stone go a little bit crazy sideways.
I would think.
So we have the slider. We have the broom, and that's what and the stabilizer. And if you'd like to,
sure.
Yeah, why don't you grab those and we'll see those in our shot. We'll try and describe them for our radio audience here.
Yeah, right. That's what we're gonna let that up to you.
We have to have descriptive audio service here this morning. So what the folks are holding is the long pole with a little bit of a red pad attachment at the top, right?
Right.
And it's got looks like little gradations on
it.
A
little bit of friction.
Friction. Yeah. Okay. And that's what's that for?
Well, so when the stone's going down the ice, as you see on TV, right? There's people ahead of it sweeping,
yeah.
And you're temporarily melting the ice this very slight bit to help the stone curl a little farther or a little more one way or the other, depending on how you're sweeping. So
if you're sweeping in front of the stone as it's going down the sheet, I'm learning the term,
yes, right?
Right, the sheet is the ice, right? When you're scrubbing or sweeping or whatever, that's actually heating the ice and it's making the stone go faster. Is that right?
You can't make it go faster, but you can make it curl less if you're sweeping in front of it.
So when it curls, what do you mean that it's doing?
So I'd pick this stone up, but it's heavy, and we're going to have you try that.
We'll try that, yes.
But if I'm going to turn around if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
But for the radio people, too. So if you imagine a stone going down the ice in front of you, and it's going to, if it's rotating to the left, it's curling to the left.
Okay.
If it's rotating to the right, it's curling to the right.
Okay.
If you're sweeping in front of it, it curls a little less, so it'll go a little farther, a little straighter, not curl quite as much.
So the curling, it really describes that rotation of the stone and which direction it's going,
right?
And potentially whether that's going faster or slower. Is that
again,
does that have anything to do
speed,
with it?
Just
not
the
speed,
just the amount of curl.
Okay, right. So that's why you see the folks, and I've seen this on the Olympics. Probably that's the most I've seen curl, but I will admit, I'll sit there and I'll be fascinated by it, not knowing everything that's going on, you know. And so that's what they're doing. And so when they're sweeping harder, they want it to curl one way or the other. And then you might hear them yell out, "Stop!" So what is it that they're trying to do at that point,
Peter? You want to talk
they want the stone to do its natural course.
Okay.
When you stop sweeping, you let the stone do what the stone is going to do as it goes down the sheet.
Mm.
If you need to affect it more, then you call your sweepers in.
Okay. And how many people are on a team for each side? How many people does a team get?
Each team has four people. Okay. There's one called a skip who's down in the house, which is where the reds and blue circles, usually red and blue, but and they stand down there. They're like the team captain that tells you where he or she wants the stone to land.
So that person is looking at where all of the stones are and sort of imagining where, if a stone has to come down in a certain angle or a certain speed or dimension or whatever, what it's got to do. So that person's in charge, basically, of the team?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And then there's a vice skip, so that each person does throw two stones. So when the skip has to throw stones, the vice skip goes down, takes the place of the skip, so the skip can throw their two stones. So there's a lead.
So they rotate the number of the people that actually throw the stones.
Yeah, first the lead. The first person who shoots is called the lead, and then the second one is just called the second. Third is called vice skip, and then the last thrower is usually the skip.
Okay.
But you can switch it around a little bit if you need to on your team. Not every single end, but at the beginning of every game, as long as you leave it the same all game.
Okay, and what's an end?
An end is when everybody is done throwing their eight stones. So there's eight ends to a game.
So is it like an inning in baseball, similar to that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And whoever scores is the one who gets to throw first at the next end.
Okay.
But maybe I'm jumping ahead.
No, that's fine. I'm getting it.
So you've got four people. Each person throws two stones.
Uh-huh.
So it's eight stones per team. And so there'll be 16 stones down the far end, and you need to skip down there because it's a long way. It's 150 feet from one end to the other. So when you're down, crouched down on the ice, ready to throw the stone, you can see the stones down the other end, but they're kind of far away, and the depth perception gets a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So the skip is down there. That's why you have someone down the other end, and he or she is watching the stone coming and just determining where it's going to end up. And then, as Peter said, you know, yelling, you hear a lot of yelling to sweep or stop or up. There's different terms. And that's because they really the only ones who can have the full perspective of where how the stone's coming towards the house.
So there's eight stones thrown per team?
Per team, yes.
Per end? Is that right?
Good job.
So 16 different stones, and then they just pull them all back, and then they go to the next end. And then how does one win the game?
Well, you have Rick on your team. That's how you win the game.
Well, at the end, it's all based on score. So just right. like baseball, the highest scoring team wins wins the game.
Is it anything like bocce, where you're throwing a jack and then getting close to the jack, and then you get so many balls close to that, and then you count those? Is that how it works?
It's very, very similar. I think that's a great analogy. Yeah. Probably the biggest difference between the two sports with bocce, you know, you're rolling a ball towards the, I think they call it the jack.
The Polina in Italian, right, yeah.
you're rolling it down, and you can actually hit that jack or Polina, so it moves. Where in curling, it's a stationary house. You're trying to get it to a stationary object. In curling, you have more control over the stone's activities by the sweeping.
Right.
When you roll your ball, it does what it does naturally.
Right.
So very, very similar. Mm-hmm. Very similar.
The scoring is very similar. You want to explain
the
scoring?
If you look at the sheet there,
you got the three rings there. See that.
And the critical part is that center little round white spot. Is where you're trying to get your stone.
Yeah, we'll describe
there.
This for our radio listeners, I'm zooming into this now for TV, so you can sort of see the end here. So what do you call that bullseye target? What's that? I'm looking at it. It's a long, long sort of rectangular sheet, right? That's that's delayed, so you probably won't see that until later. But
So it's a long, narrow sheet of ice, and there's this bullseye at the end.
Yeah.
For people on radio, it looks like a bullseye. Mm-hmm. And it's called the house. So
there's
a white circle in the center, which is the button. And there's a red circle around that.
Yep.
Go ahead. Yeah. And a white circle on that, and on this one, and a blue circle. So it's 12 feet from the center to the outside of the outer ring. So there's rings, and you're trying to get to the center or closest to the center. And the scoring, you want to explain the scoring, Peter?
Yeah, so when the stones come down to the house and you're getting your stones into that location, you're trying to get closest to that center button. And the stone that is closest is the one that gets the point.
So that team will get at least 1 point?
Can
a team get more than 1 point?
If they have two stones that are closest to that button, then they get 2 points.
They'll get two. Okay.
If there's a stone, you know, they could get 3 points. You could technically get 8 points, but that's very unheard of because there's a lot of stones going down there. But you can, you know, as you get closer to the button, is that's the goal, is to get your stone there. And to get that score.
Is there a certain number of points that win the game, or is it just they total it up at the end of the eight ends?
It's a total.
Just a total. Yeah. Okay.
So with the house, there is no point value for these rings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, common question we get from folks is, you know, do you get 4 points, whatever, for the various color?
Like darts.
Like
darts.
It's just sheerly whoever comes closest to the button. And the game changes because you can have a stone that lands close to the button, and the other team can throw their stone and knock it out, and now they're sitting close. So it's as they say, chess on ice. It's a very fluid, dynamic situation, and constantly changing with each stone.
Yeah. We're speaking today, if you're just joining us, with the folks from the Curling Club of the Berkshires. You're hearing the voices of Cindy Nasman, Mark Fischetti, Rick Nasman, and Peter O'Neill. And Peter is a board member of the club. It's a nonprofit organization, right?
Yes.
All volunteer organization. Rick is a club president, from what I have here. Mark is a member chair, and Cindy is a member.
Correct.
Right? All right, good. And so this is great, and I just got a serious education on curling here, and it just sounds a lot of fun, I got to say. And is that, as you get better at it, I assume the first time you ever do it, you're not all that great, right? Because it's going to be some muscle memory and some strategy. What's some of the strategy of curling? Because we know sort of the function of the game now. Now, how do you get into, because every game has a strategy and some things that you work on to essentially beat the other team. That's what you're there for, right? Is to get to the end of that. And it's competitive, I'll bet, after a while.
Yeah, that's
the strategy of the skip. So the skip has the background and the history of playing a game. That's usually why he becomes the skip, or that person becomes a skip. So they have that knowledge, and they know how to direct the stones. They have in their mind how they want the game to play, Of course, it changes as the other team comes in and mm-hmm. you know makes their shots. You have to react to that. But the skip is basically the person that leads it and has the idea of how they want you to throw your stone. Mm-hmm. They want you where to throw the stone. Mm-hmm.
And where to throw the stone, would it be to put it in a place that would block another team from getting their stone to the right place, or would it be?
It could be that. It could be a block or a guard was what we call it.
Okay.
Or it could be a drawing in. What means going around other stones and getting behind them to get closest to the button.
Is that hard to do?
Or it could be a takeout shot.
Is that the hardest thing, is to get it around another stone?
Well, they can all be difficult. Yeah. It's not, you know, just as easy for any shot. Each takes its own skill to do, whether you're doing a guard or a takeout.
Is that what they call it when you're going to bump someone
else's
stone out of the way?
Yeah, when you want to knock the other opponent's stone out of the way.
Takeout. I like that.
I think and a takeout could
that sounds violent.
You could say a takeout, but a takeout doesn't mean it goes off the sheet. A takeout could mean it gets bumped and it moves, you know, further away from the.
I think a lot of people who curl in the beginning like the takeout because first of all it's just kind of straight.
Yeah.
And if you hit the stone at any kind of speed and on any part of it, it'll slide off. Right. It'll slide out of the house, out of the bullseye. Mm. So, but as you curl more, you realize, as Peter was starting to say, you can take stuff out, but you might want to hit a stone on one side. So when you knock it out, your stone slides over the other way a little bit strategically to be where you want it. Mm. Or if you're drawing behind, those are kind of two of the very basic shots. Mm. If there's a guard up higher away from the house and you want to get behind it, so you draw around, you curl around behind the stone. But once there's a few stones there, then there's a lot more strategy of touching one stone or getting behind a few stones or getting a few out of the way.
Is there a strategy based in almost like chess where there's a first couple of moves that you want to make that would make the opposing team have more difficulty at the beginning? Or, you know, is that part of the strategy also? Because I've seen on the Olympics occasionally they'll put that first stone and it's not anywhere like it's in the front of the house, right? And not like you're not trying to get to that center of the bullseye right away.
Cindy, you want to
talk? Yeah.
Yes, for one thing.
And I see you have your gloves on there, too, right?
Go USA. So, for one thing.
We don't keep it that cold in the studio, for the record.
The Olympics, we don't always understand their strategy because they are so advanced that we are still basic curlers, even after curling 10, 12 years.
I'll bet you watch it, though, when it comes on the Olympics.
Oh, we
right?
love yeah. it. We yeah. set our alarm to get up in the middle of the night mm-hmm. to watch it.
Really? Do you?
Yeah. Well, especially when it's Sweden, USA.
Okay.
Is Sweden the big 800-pound gorilla of curling? I would have guessed Canada.
Yeah. Canada's always great also. But Rick is a Swedish background, mm-hmm. so that's why we have a big...
Okay.
But what was the question?
Strategy. High guard or...
Yeah, so usually if you are not the last stone to be thrown, that means you do not have the hammer.
That's the another hammer.
Term. The hammer is the last stone.
Like
there's another term for you now.
Violent term, yeah.
So if you are the first to throw for that end, you usually throw a guard, and whether it's in the center because you want to block that last shot, or whether it's off to the side for a guard or in the house. It's good to know what the other team can throw. Some teams, the first thrower's not good at a takeout, so you could put it in the house, and then they're going to miss it, and then you've already got one in the house. So that's the strategy.
So there is. That's a lot going on there.
Sure, Rick, you want to talk about Rick likes to talk about the chess on ice thing, which is true.
Yeah.
But as far as basic strategies about setting high guards or drawing in or splitting the house.
Well, yeah. It's very complicated, very dynamic, but it depends whether you have the hammer or you don't have the hammer. Hmm. As Cindy mentioned, having guards put up front allows a team to then draw behind and basically protect their stones. Hmm. And whether you have high guards versus low guards, a lot of that can be dependent upon the ice conditions.
So a high guard is where? Where is the stone on that?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to lift this up. I don't know if we can see the hog line.
We'll see it.
Yeah. So here is the hog line. So when you're delivering a stone coming down, the stone has to get over the hog line to even count.
Okay.
If it doesn't reach the hog line, you take the stone off.
Okay.
But assuming it gets over the hog line, now anywhere in this area is what we consider guards. Well, actually, it could go in the house, but this is typically the guard area.
This is so, just for folks on radio. This is just before you get to the bullseye. You're on the ice, coming towards the bullseye, the circle.
So it's like the final one quarter of the sheet, right?
Before the bullseye. Yeah.
Correct. So a high guard would be something just over the hog line.
Okay.
And a tight guard would be something just before the house.
Okay.
So, you know, placing those guards, a lot of that is dependent upon, I'll say, ice conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Because some ice curls more than other. Some ice is more straight. So if you have a high guard, it's very difficult for folks to draw behind.
Because it's basically blocking your sight, right?
You're blocking that lane, and the stone will keep going. And where if you get a lot of curl, then you want a low guard because the stone can curl around that.
Mm.
And the further you put it down, it doesn't have as much opportunity to curl in.
Mm-hmm.
So the ice conditions are a big factor in that as well. And again, as Cindy mentioned, you know, knowing your team, your opponent, what their capabilities or lack thereof are, might depend on what type of guard you put up there and where it's located.
But also the ice changes throughout the game.
Ah.
So you're constantly trying to pay attention to how much curl, whether it's still straight, you know.
That Zamboni only comes out so often, right?
Yeah, we do a lot of hand work. All the clubs do a lot of hand work to treat the ice. And we can talk about that later if you want to.
Yeah, definitely.
But just on Cindy's point, though, the ice changes. You know, as more stones go down and back and forth each end, it's affecting the surface of the ice. I think people don't understand that about a lot of winter sports. I mean, skiing's the same way. You know, you watch people, they have runs going downhill and they're doing slalom or whatever, and, you know, there's 10, 20, 30 people. It changes the snow surface over the course of the race, just like the stones change the ice surface. And even the temperature and the humidity, if there's a lot of people on the ice or a few people on the ice, even that can change the surface a little bit. So
the question is, do you want to be early on or do you want to be later on, or do you just have to adjust?
You're playing against the other team each end, right? So everybody has to kind of figure out what's going on with the ice. Is it curling more now? Is it curling less now? Is it quicker now?
Right.
So that's definitely a dynamic part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the hammer, and that will rotate based on who curls first.
Who scores?
Is that correct?
Who scores the point?
Who scores the point?
If you score the point, the other team gets the hammer to throw last.
Okay, so there's good and bad about that. You get to throw first, but you don't get the last shot, essentially.
And a lot of times when you're watching an Olympic match, it comes down to that last stone. The skip will throw that last stone and try to draw into that button shot to get that one point. That's usually what you see, a lot of stones in play, but then it comes down to that one final shot. And I think a lot of people, when they're watching, that don't know about curling, they look at all the rocks in the house and they go, why don't they just throw a stone down there and just bust the whole thing up, right?
Yep.
So I mean, that could be a strategy too, but really, with the positioning of the stones and how close they are to each other and the way a stone can hit one and ricochet off another, you really can't just throw a stone down there and just knock everything out. I mean, you can, but, you know, a lot of the time it's the strategy to get that one point. You get the point, you win a point, you win a point, you win a point. Mm. Next thing you know, you won the game. It's not just about, you know.
It's slow and steady, right?
Slow and steady wins the race.
It's definitely slow and steady. That's a good point, Sean. It really is about that, you know, because you've got eight chances to score, right? So it builds up over time.
Mm-hmm.
And as Peter said, if you just sort of knock stuff around, you also you might do more harm than good in that case.
Right.
You might put yourself at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And then that person that has the hammer can, if you go down it, if the other team is just throwing the stone and moving all the other stones out of the way, that hammer gets that, could go in and get that last shot, mm-hmm. and get the point.
And I think, as you mentioned, the hammer is usually delivered by the skip, right? So that's is that your ringer, the person that you trust the most for winning the game?
Pretty much, often the best shooter, I'd say.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's.
But that's why sometimes you do change it around, because sometimes there's a person who's better at the strategy, mm-hmm. but not the best shooter. So somebody who might be a better shooter can throw last, and the skip can throw first, second, or third.
We're speaking today with the Curling Club of the Berkshires. If you're just joining us here, coming up to the top of the hour, where we'll take our quick little break and come back with more talk about curling and the Curling Club and how you might get involved with it. Just have any interest at all. I know these folks would love to speak with you more and get you involved with the club. We're going to talk about the Boys and Girls Club and how much time you can get on the ice, and maybe the future plans of the club and the kinds of things that you're working toward to grow it and to make it even greater here in the Berkshire. So we'll be right back after this. And by the way, I'm going to come around to the other side of the table for our TV viewers, and I'm going to try and pick up that stone. I'm going to see how, because I look at it and the thing looks just massive. So I'm going to try that, see how that works out. It's not going to do much for our radio folks, but you'll get the point. All right. 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. This is Morning Drive, and we'll be right back after this. Stick around.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM. Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
At Pittsfield Community Television, we have a saying: anyone can learn to create television. With the support of trained production staff, we can teach you how to professionally operate a camcorder, use editing software to tell a story, work as a team in a production studio, and take those skills into the community. If you've been curious as to how video production works, we'd love to have you as a member. Visit us online at pittsfieldtv.org or call us at 445-4234 for more information.
Hi, this is Josh Cutler. On behalf of the Jewish community of Berkshire County, I'd like to wish all listeners of WTBR-FM a happy and joyous Hanukkah season. This year promises to be one with many exciting community celebrations. May this Festival of Lights be one that is filled with family, friends, great food, and great spirit. L'chaim.
Welcome to Beyond, a one-hour program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. I'll be your host, Beverly Prentice. Listen in every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. My email is beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at Sondrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. You're listening to us live and local this morning, as we do on Thursday and Friday mornings. I'm Sean Sayre here with you. It's Friday, January 30th, waking up to a cold day. My thermometer still says -5. It might be warming up a little bit more than that. I don't know, but it's certainly a cold morning, probably one of the coldest ones we're going to get. And we have a cold day on tap with some wind also. We're going to get that in the weather forecast. And then right after that, we'll come back to our discussion with the folks from the Curling Club of the Berkshires. Fantastic. I got schooled here this morning. I know a lot more about curling than I did at 7:30, so I hope you do too. And it is fascinating. I'm looking forward to the rest of the conversation with these folks. First, let's get to that weather forecast one more time from the National Weather Service.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Extreme cold warning in effect until 11 a.m. EST this morning. Today, sunny, cold with highs around 7 above. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 28 below. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing. Cold with lows around 6 below. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wind chill values as low as 19 below. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, we're still hearing about those wind chill forecasts well below zero, looking at 19, 20 below for those winds. Definitely bundle up out there today. Keep an eye on those pets. Make sure they don't go, just like John Peralt said yesterday from the Berkshire Humane Society. Don't leave them out there, folks. Let them do their business and come right back in. You may have to chase them, but get them back in. Take care of your pets out there. Okay, welcome back to the show, and Curling Club of the Berkshires again reintroduce you folks. We do have Peter O'Neill, board member of the club, Mark Fischetti, a member chair, and Rick Nasman and Cindy Nasman. Rick is the club president and Cindy is a member, and we want to thank you all for joining me here again this morning and teaching me and our entire audience about curling and your club. I think I am going to try and take my wireless mic. We'll see how this works. Let's see if I can make that work here. Okay, now we've got it. So I'm actually going to take my headphones off. I'm going to walk around the front here, and I'm going to try and pick up that stone.
All right, Sean. Right. Here we go. Ready for you.
So let's see. Now, I want to thank you for bringing in such great show and tell stuff here this morning. So this one, Peter O'Neill, this has your name
on it. It has my name. Yes. This is your stone. I sponsored the stone, yes.
That's awesome. What does a stone like this cost?
Well,
there's a question of our five questions.
Yeah. We're going to ask you that. What do you think a stone costs?
Oh my
Sean?
Goodness, it's got to be in the hundreds, right? I mean, you've got to be looking at $300-400 bucks, maybe.
Good.
Am I
keep
close?
Keep going.
Oh boy, not over a thousand
for a used stone. For a used stone, $300 to $400 is good.
Yeah.
So there's 16 stones in the set.
16 stones.
Right.
Okay.
Eight of each color, two colors.
Yeah.
And if you bought new set of stones, it can run $7,000,
$8,000, $9,000. Wow. Okay. So right up there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they're all perfectly balanced. They're beautiful. And they're heavy.
By perfectly balanced, yeah. And how do they must machine these right to perfection, right? It just has to be exactly the right size, the right weight. It's made out of granite.
Granite,
right? That's the key there. They're all made out of granite. So when they bump up against each other, they're not going to get destroyed.
No.
They stay pretty good.
And that's one of the, peculiarities, but the stone, curling stones actually come from one location.
Really?
An island off of Scotland, Elijah Craig, an uninhabited island, and it's water-resistant granite.
Okay.
So pretty much all curling stones come from there, and it's because it's a very, very dense granite. Doesn't usually chip, break, you know, obviously these things are smashing all the time.
Yeah.
So, it's a very specialized stone, and they are machined and fabricated for not only recreational curlers, but the Olympic curlers as well.
Wow.
And it's quite a process. So if anybody really gets interested, if you probably Google how to make a curling stone, there is a video out there that shows, and it's an interesting process, how they mine it. And
from the quarry, right?
From the quarry and all the way to the honing of the stone. And, very interesting.
So that's interesting. I didn't know they all came from the same place, and it's all made out of the same material.
Yep.
And they weigh over 40 pounds, right?
About 42 pounds.
42 pounds.
See what you think, John.
Yeah, sorry. We've got to try it. Here we go.
Give it a lift and see how you do.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
Yep. I can see now. That I'm thinking 40 pounds, like a gallon of milk is 8 pounds, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So that's 5 gallons of milk I just picked up.
That's right.
But you're not supposed to pick it up on the ice. Have to.
Always stays down,
stays
right?
So
we slide them around.
Somebody has to pick them up and put them on the ice.
Eventually.
Once it's there, though, you're pretty good.
It's there forever.
Okay. And the other interesting thing about the stone, Mark, if you can pick it up and kind of turn it over, the stone is not flat on the bottom.
Oh, look
the
at stone, that. You're right.
The stone is cup-shaped there, and it's only riding on this little spot right here.
Yeah.
The wearing ring.
So for radio again, right, so if you imagine the bottom of the stone being flat, it's not flat. It's kind of concave up towards the inside of the stone. So there's just a little band that's a running band, they call it, that's just touching the ice. You can you're on TV, you can see it's kind of a white ring because that's been on the ice.
And what's the reason for that? Why do they shape it that way? It just rides along the ice a little
better?
Just
to minimize the contact with the ice, friction, to reduce friction. And it, as they say, the wearing ring, that just rides on the ice and minimizes the amount of contact. So it slides very, very easily.
Okay.
And that's what gives it's... How long
that's
and
actually
how far
one,
it goes.
One of the coolest things about what you were asking us earlier about how to, you know, our first experience. Yeah. So when we do Learn to Curl at the Boys and Girls Club, I think people are a little apprehensive. And then when you get out there and you are down on the ice and you have this heavy stone front and you push out, there's this kind of this Zen moment where you and the stone, you're all sliding out on the ice. It's almost frictionless.
Yeah.
And you let the stone go and it goes and it goes and it goes. Because there's a lot of weight, there's very little friction, and it takes a little bit of time for it to get across that whole 150 feet to the other end. So when we
so
do
at one moment, you and the stone are both moving at the
you're
same
all moving
speed,
together.
The same direction, right? And then you decide at one moment it's time to let it go.
Let it go. Yep.
And you give it a little turn so that it curls. Right. It's this cool moment. Yeah. And I think when we do Learn to Curl, a lot of people are kind of surprised. And they have that experience, and then there's a big smile on your face.
Yeah.
So if you want to learn to curl, go to curlberkshires.org. We have Learn to Curl coming up February 21st, actually.
Wow. So not long from now, February 21st.
Right. Right. Yep.
All right. Yep. And that'll be at the Boys and Girls Club?
Boys and Girls Club in Pittsfield.
Okay.
That's going to be quite a day.
If people
want
to sign up for that, they go to
curlberkshires.org.
And then submit their name there, and you'll get in touch
with
them.
There's a sign up link, and they can do it all online.
Great.
February 21st is going to be a cool day,
right?
Because we have a kind of a co-op thing going on with Hot Plate,
okay,
brewery in Pittsfield,
just a couple of blocks down from the Boys and Girls.
Yeah, right. So that day at 1 o'clock on February 21st is the men's Olympic final.
Oh, right.
So
right.
Hot Plate's going to show it on their TV.
Great.
We're going to be there, Curl Berkshire members, and Hot Plate is going to release the Berkshire Bonspiel beer.
Berkshire Bonspiel.
Yes, Bonspiel is the term for tournament, basically.
Ah, all right.
And it's a Creek Lambic, which is kind of sweet cherry kind of beer. And they're going to release it. We're all going to watch the men's final. Hmm. Learn to Curl at 6 o'clock that evening on the 21st at the Boys and Girls Club. And then when we're done, we're all going back to Hot Plate. They're going to have Berkshire Bonspiel beer on tap, ready to go.
Do they call it après, you know, like they do with skiing? Is there an après curling?
That day there will be.
No, but that's a good question, but it really does have a term.
Yeah.
It's broom stacking.
Broom stacking. Yes. Okay, I love it.
Because back in the day when they were outdoors curling on lakes and ponds and
rivers,
right, they would stack their brooms to take a break and warm up by the fire and maybe have a hot toddy or something.
Maybe.
Like that. it's an integral part of the game, broom stacking. You get to you all shake hands before the game, you shake hands after the game, and then you sit together after the game and share a drink of some sort and just catch up with each other. Yeah. So it's a very cordial,
very social.
Very social.
Important.
We're competitive, but it isn't a scary competitive like some other sports because you're complimenting the other team on their shot.
All the violence is with the stones.
Exactly.
There's no body checking.
No, right. It's not a contact sport except for that. So we have this other device here, which I don't know what this is, but it looks like a major ice scraper that I would use on my car for that 18-inch snowstorm that we just got.
I don't think we've ever tried that.
Tell me what that is.
Well, that's called a stabilizer.
Okay.
And if anybody's ever watched Olympic curling or any curling, a lot of the sliders, the people throwing the stones, they use their broom to kind of support themselves.
Oh, okay.
Until you get to a level, experience level that you feel comfortable, we use a stabilizer in the broom's place.
Okay.
So basically it's one point of contact. You got the stone, you got the stabilizer, and it just gives you that balance. So for newer curlers, these tend to be more heavily utilized. Even for experience,
I've seen
more
Olympic curlers with stabilizers.
Right?
Yeah.
So again, for radio, if you imagine yourself, you crouch down like you see on TV, right? You crouch down ready to throw the stone. If you're a right-handed person, you've got the stone in your right hand. You've got this little stabilizer. It's just like a little plastic brace that's on in your left hand, and you're pushing out. And the stone's in your right to stabilize it in your left. Or as Rick said, a lot of people use the broom as the stabilizer, and you slide out. So it's helping you kind of maintain your balance as you let things go.
Great. And, oops, I don't want to knock these down, but this is the sweeper or the broom?
This is the broom, that we utilize to in advance of the stone as it goes down. And as we talked earlier, this helps to basically reduce the friction, melt the ice as a stone goes down. Can't slow or speed the stone up, but it does reduce the curl on the stone and keeps the trajectory to allow the stone to go further. One interesting call it fact that I had heard at one point was probably at the Olympic level, but sweeping, I think a lot of folks have this, you know, what does sweeping really do?
They see
what it, but how much does it actually affect? And I've heard that, you know, sweeping can continue a stone 10 to 15 feet further than if there wasn't sweeping.
Wow.
So over the distance.
So it makes
of,
a difference.
It makes a huge difference. Yeah. And sweeping is a very, very key part of the sport. And you don't realize how much it does.
And that's why it's a team sport. You've got all four of those people on the team all doing their own part.
Correct.
To make that happen.
Yep.
And then this device is...
So that's a this is a stick, which
I could have told you that.
It's a stick.
It's a stick with a little doodad on the end, which basically attaches to the handle of the stone.
Oh, okay.
So for I think one of the things when people do learn to curls or even look at curling and they say I can't do that, I can't bend down to get in that that position to deliver the stone. There is the option of using a stick, which for folks that have bad knees or just can't, you know, of an age, they just can't do it. And again, for folks on radio, the stick is basically like shuffleboard. It attaches to the stone, the handle of the stone, and you walk and push the stone along, and then you can put the handle on the stone, basically spin the stone with the stick, and it allows folks... you know, to curl at really any age, well into their years.
And that kind of goes to the discussion
or
of
ability.
How many different kinds of people can do this, right? How many differently abled people can do this sport and how inclusive is it, right? That was another thing we wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
and I'll walk back around here to my mic.
There's even people in wheelchairs that curl. There's a complete wheelchair curling teams. There's tournaments for that. So it's you can have... many people of all abilities curling, and you don't have to be like that Olympic person getting squatting down on the hack and pushing out, and you know you say, oh, I have bad knees, I can't do that, my flexibility's not that good, I can't do that. You can use the stick, and it's a legitimate option to curl, and there's very good people that stick curl and are very competitive. It's no different. There's no advantage to it. You think that it is. We've tried curling. people who slide go, oh, well, I'll try that curling. I'll stick curl, and you realize quickly there's no advantage to it.
Okay.
You have to still learn the skill with that stick.
And Cindy, I think you wanted to speak to that also about different people and how inclusive the sport can be.
Sure. I mean, they starts young children. I don't know. I think I've heard as young as six. They do have some smaller stones for young kids. But then there's people into their 90s who curl. And as Peter said, all abilities. If you don't consider yourself a great athlete in other sports, I mean, curling is a good option for you. It's even though it's cool out there on the ice, some people say I don't want to curl because it's too cold, but you just wear the proper gear and you're all good.
Well, anyone who's familiar with any kind of ice sport, ice skating or hockey or anything like that, you know that you're going to get into an environment, right? It's not going to be the coldest like being outside today, but it's also not going to be the warmest. So you got to dress appropriately, right? You have to sort of build up that tolerance to being in that temperature for a while. But I would imagine you're also active. I mean, if you're sweeping in front of the stone, you know, you're working up some sweat there, I would imagine.
Yes, you get very warm when you're sweeping. And a lot of times you want to sweep so you can warm up.
Right?
It's not as cold as people think. It's usually 40 degrees or so in the room where the ice is. So it's not terrible. And you're doing something. So
in a hockey rink environment, it's a little cooler. They keep the temperature's cooler there. But in a dedicated facility, it's really not that bad.
And there's no wind.
And you'll see, like, in the Olympics, wearing T-shirts, yeah. Right? Shorts. I'm bundled up with a jacket, but then you see other people in a T-shirt, curling.
So let's talk about the Boys and Girls Club, where obviously ice time is a precious commodity there, right? It's always hard to, even the hockey teams have trouble finding time. You've got some dedicated time, and when is that normal time that you have to be able to run your tournaments or your practices or anything like that there?
Rick, you on?
Sure. Well, we curl out of the boys' club probably seven to eight times a year.
Okay.
Which is about twice a month, mm-hmm. and typically Saturdays from 6 to 9 p.m.
Okay.
And with the boys' club, we've got a lot of preparation.
Boys and Girls Club.
Boys and Girls Club, yeah. I'm sorry. A lot of preparation for the ice that we do. So maybe I'll talk a bit about that, going through the preparation.
Yeah.
So I mean, as most people may be familiar with hockey ice, where the Zamboni goes out there and scrapes the ice and puts down a nice clear coat of water, we don't actually curl on that type of ice.
Mm. And that's because?
Well, it's because that's just flat sheet of water ice that's formed.
It's like
like glass, yeah. Exactly. Good analogy, Sean. We're looking to make the ice actually more like sandpaper.
Okay.
So the difference between hockey ice and curling ice is quite different. Mm. Curling ice is actually more stable is when you're walking on it than hockey ice.
Yep.
So what we'll do is after the Zamboni comes off the ice, does their typical Zamboni thing, we go out there and we pebble the ice. We actually put droplets of water. We spray water, kind of
like a mist.
A mist. Yeah, okay. That's a good. We put a mist on the ice, which puts all these little pebbles. And then after we do that, then we actually come back and we take a little. It's called a nipper, but a device that goes and just shaves the top of those little ridges, those bumps, and makes them all flat before we do the curling. So when we talked earlier about the stone and that wearing ring, and then these little bumps. It's just the bumps that the stone is riding on. So, again, it's trying to minimize the amount of surface that it's touching.
If you can imagine.
And how long does that take you to do, to prepare the ice before people can start curling?
Well, it's about an hour that we go through. So once the Zamboni is done doing their thing.
So another hour until
an hour.
It's ready.
Yeah. And part of that is we first thing we do is we get the stones on the ice. We store them off the ice. Mm. But then we put them on the ice to acclimate. The stones need to acclimate to the temperature of the ice.
Yeah.
So they don't. Basically melt into the ice.
Yeah.
So we put them out there first, then we go through our pebbling activities. We put the hacks, the starting blocks, if you will, into the ice. We melt those into the ice. That's what you're pushing off.
Okay.
And we nip the ice. We rock the ice. We actually take the rocks and go over all the ice beforehand. So again, we're doing four sheets. We've got four sheets of ice that we do at the Boys Club. And we got a kind of a core group of folks that do that. It takes about five or six of us to go through all that for that hour.
So with four sheets of ice, you can get a good number of people out there and playing, right?
Yeah, and when we do learn to curl, so there's four sheets. You've got four people on a team. There's two teams on a sheet. So eight people on a sheet, four sheets, 32 people.
Yeah.
So when we have learn to curls like February 21st, that's as many as we could take, but it's a lot. And we members of the club are instructors, so we'll kind of group people up in groups of four and get an instructor, show you what to do, get you out there. As Peter said earlier, we end up playing a short game with everybody, and that's when it kind of all comes together, and then everyone's having a good time, and then we'll typically go out, and we'll go out on February 21st to Hot Plate.
How many people do you have in the club that are doing either instructing or playing or new members? What's the number of people?
This year, it's in the low 50s members.
So that's a good number.
That's how it's kind of been that way for a while now.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And you're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Yep. There's no paid staff. It's all volunteer.
Volunteer. Right? We have regular board meetings, just like you need to do for a nonprofit in Massachusetts. So, yeah.
The club has dues because obviously there are costs to this, right? To rent the ice and to the stones. You mentioned how much those cost and all the gear and things like that. Is that reasonable? How does that work?
Yeah, I think we're very reasonable, actually. $75 to join for the year.
Hmm.
And then you sort of pay as you go. So if you want to come curl, it's usually $25 for the night.
Hmm.
But if you learn to curl, again, go to curlberkshires.org. It's all right there. But it's very affordable, we think.
Yeah. So I think you mentioned at the beginning of the show, you kind of got interested in it first because you went and found other places that were doing this. Were they doing it in a place like the Boys and Girls Club, or did they have a dedicated building or a facility of their own? How did that work?
So we're
and I'm kind of asking that as a way to transition to the next question, which is, what would you like to do in the future as a club?
So we currently are considered an arena club. Okay. And what that means, there's really two terms. You have an arena club and you have a dedicated club. Arena club is hockey ice. Mm-hmm. There are some clubs, that's all they do is curl on hockey ice. And then there are some clubs that are dedicated that are just solely dedicated to curling. So the ice is always curling ice. That's all they do. And that's the facility down in Norfolk, Connecticut. Okay. There's a facility in Albany, a facility mm-hmm. in Schenectady. So when, as a club, what we do is we have 7 to 8 events at the Boys and Girls Club, but then we also travel. We rent ice at Albany, Norfolk, and Schenectady. Hmm. So we'll take our club members to go over there and to, you know, experience dedicated curling ice, which is, you know, kind of, it's a definite different experience than arena ice.
Huh. And that's what we're working towards.
And that's what we're working towards.
So what would you imagine the club having, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road? Would you have your own building and your own facility with I'm thinking of all the refrigeration and all that stuff that has to go into making ice, right? It's kind of not a cheap thing or an easy thing to do, but is that what you'd like to see the club get into?
You described it just right, Sean. Yep. You have your own building, it's long building, so you have the ice in there. There's a warm room, which is usually separated by a glass wall, so you can be comfortable and watch the curling going out on the ice. Most clubs have a bar and places to sit, so it becomes a big social event, like Cindy said earlier.
The kitchen.
That's been our goal, and we've raised a lot of money amongst our members as a starter, and we're looking for a place to either build or refurbish a big old open building, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, we do have some open buildings. I'll tell you, just from looking for our PCTV and WTBR purposes, it isn't very easy sometimes to find an appropriate building for what you want to do around here. I don't know why.
Right.
You would think it would be, but it's not as easy as you would think.
We're on the hunt. So if anybody has a place that they might be interested in us becoming part of or owning, let us know. Yeah.
But clearly it's a growing sport, right? Especially in this area, that people are getting more aware of it. And I think we did a pretty good job of doing that here this morning as well. But just the idea that, you know, sports, you know, have a growing period. I think of how popular bowling was, let's say, in the 1940s and 1950s. And there are still people that are really passionate about bowling today, but maybe not quite as popular as it was. And then there are other newer sports that are making their way up. And I think of lacrosse, for example, as one where it's made a lot of inroads in high schools and things like that. How do you get younger people involved and interested in curling?
Well, I think if we had a dedicated facility, we could get that interest a little bit more, because we would have the option of curling more than just a Saturday. We could have stuff during the week. And by doing that, we could have high school teams.
Yeah,
you could have, you know, you could have like other clubs that have a men's league, a women's league, a mixed league.
Right.
You know, they have something going on just about every day, a dedicated curling club. And there's definitely more visibility of a dedicated place than there is just to say, hey, we curl every Saturday when we can at the Pittsfield Boys and Girls Club. And, you know, I think that the dedicated facility would come a long way for our club and membership and enthusiasm, as much as we have enthusiasm.
Well, certainly you have a good amount of enthusiasm here today. I can tell that just from speaking with you, and you have the depth of knowledge of the sport and the excitement for it, which is great. In the last minute that we've got here today, the Berkshire Curling Club, again, just to let you know, we've got Peter O'Neill, Rick Nasman, Mark Fischetti, Cindy Nasman here on the show this morning, teaching us all about curling here in the Berkshires. And any last thoughts or things you want to mention, remind us again about the big invitational for new members?
Yeah, it's curlberkshires.org. Everything's there if you want to know what's going on. If you want to try it, the next Learn to Curl is February 21st. 6 p.m. at Boys and Girls Club, and we're going to be at Hot Plate before and after for Olympics and the beer that they're releasing in our honor, which is very nice of them. They're a really great group over there.
Fantastic. Greg?
And one notable fact is that curling is not new to Pittsfield. Curling actually has been in Pittsfield back in 1896. There was a Pittsfield Curling Club.
Wow.
That operated over on Woodlawn Ave for about 5 years, a building. Wow. And we've got pictures of that. So it's got a history.
And with that, we're going to say happy curling to everyone and have a great weekend.
Good
Thanks
curling.
Again for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, John.
Take care, everybody. Stay warm out there, and we'll see you next week. Take care.